Before I begin, I would like to express my deepest gratitude to Reverend Master Mayon and the community at Shasta Abbey for the welcoming they have given me in returning to the monastery last year. This is my first public talk, so I haven't had this opportunity before. But they have been very welcoming, kind, and very generous and opening the doors and the gates to the monastery for me again. And it has been invaluable in my training, in my later years, and as they keep passing on. Anyway, thank you. Now I know that we have just come out of meditation, at least many of us here who were here for the meditation this morning. But I would again like us to approach that place in our body and mind before I proceed on with some Dharma this morning. So, if you would please be willing to sit quietly with dignity and respect of who and what you are, and respecting all that are sitting here with you. Relax into your awareness of being fully present right now, without judging and without opinions of the conditioned chatter that flows through your mind. Sense the spaciousness that comes with this awareness and accepts you as you are. You are just like this, right here at ease, and gently holding yourselves. Let this awareness embrace your mind, your body, your emotions without grasping or pushing away anything that arises in this moment. Let it all be as it is without holding on to any of it. Be at ease and receptive. Open yourself up. Being still, fully present in this moment, let go of any tension or stress you may be experiencing and retreat within gently and with clarity. Now allow the body to settle nicely into this dignified, upright meditation posture that we are all so familiar with as we move into the silence of our heart. Your spine is straight, reaching up to the neck and the head, and resting on the pelvis. Feel your sits bones rooted into the chair as we move into the meditation posture, willingly and with our hearts open. Gracefully rising up out of the pelvis, the spine settles in. Shoulder blades drip down toward the hips. Your heart will open, and as you drop these shoulders down, and now allow the chin to slightly be down and the back of the head gently pressed back. Now just relax deeply and breathe naturally. Breathe quietly for just a moment. Now, as we prepare to listen to the Dharma from this position of seated meditation, be aware of what is within you that hears, that will respond to the universal truth that is embedded in the words that you will be listening to. This is what we refer to as experiencing the turning of the wheel of the Dharma. And I have thought myself, though others may not have thought about this, that listening to the scriptures in the Buddhist tradition can be likened to a love song or a beautiful inviting song of the Buddha. that which is universally awake, that continually speaks to our heart, our Buddha nature. These words from the scriptures and the poems and the various things that come out of our tradition, they draw us, pull us, point us in directions that we may not want to go, inspire us, push us, and turn us toward who we truly are and what is right before us, even though often it is not comfortable. And the teaching also offers us remedies of what we can do to resolve the suffering, the dissatisfaction created by our greed, hate, and delusion in its myriad forms in our daily life. That we have committed ourselves to resolve in taking on this practice, our koan of dissatisfaction. Now, there's a few more points. I'm talking to you about listening. I think you probably have picked up. I would like to say about listening that may be of use. First, relax as you are in your meditation position and open yourself to enjoying yourself. And trust in your ability to listen. Internally and externally. And remember, the Dharma does not give you anything in a measurable way. It points you in a direction, and in a direction that you need to prove true for yourself. Listening is not a means to something else other than just simply the listening for the teaching that is good for you. And to truly listen is to participate in the Dharma. It is not being fed information as in school or in a lecture. It is the asking from a quiet mind when you listen, what is the teaching here for me? And it may not be anything the teacher or whoever is offering the words says, but how your mind and your heart receives or reacts to it. And that is enough. And you may learn more about the Dharma from observing your reactions with genuine interest and non-attachment than you do from the speaker's words themselves. Those words will penetrate where it's needed. So the Dharma I'm going to look at today, and as best I can, I don't want to go into inadequacy and all that sort of stuff, but as best I can, make a few comments. It is a poem that we all are quite familiar with, I think. I think there's a number of newer folks here, but in our Buddhist writings, it's one of the official teachings of the Soto Zen sect. We refer to it the Serene Reflection Meditation tradition. And it appears in this book, Buddhist Writings. And it is part of a group of poems, aphoristic poems. There's about three of them. And the particular one that I'm going to look at today, translated by Reverend Hubert, whom a number of us know, that which is engraved upon the heart that trusts to the eternal. Now, as I look at this, it almost brings tears to my eyes because it was the first Buddhist reading that hooked me. And this was back in the early 70s. And each time I pick it up, it's always pointing me in a particular direction at a particular time. Never the same. And so it is actually my honor and privilege to offer it a little bit this morning for your benefit. So I wanted just to look at the title for just a moment. That which is engraved upon the heart that trusts to the eternal. When I'm looking at this right now in this particular time, the engraved upon the heart is talking about the Buddha nature. That which is engraved upon the heart. And I recall having a conversation with Reverend Hubert about that. That it is engraved upon the heart. It is there when you come into existence, and it will be there when you go out of existence. And that which is engraved upon the heart is that trusts to the eternal, to that which is. We could call it cosmic Buddha, the eternal, Tathagata, whatever it is. We are not it, but it is all of us. And so this is Buddha nature responding to that which is. And we entrust it or trust it to the eternal. And I do want to share something. We won't get through the whole poem today, but enough of it to get a good gist of it. I'd like to share a quote that some of us are familiar with, Jan Chosen Bays. She wrote a foreword to a book that has a different translation than Reverend Hubert's. But what she said in here, I thought you might find very revealing and helpful in your view and ability to receive the teaching from this particular poem. What Jan Chosen Bays, Roshi Chosen Bays says is, Kanchi Sosan's poem is a favorite among many people because it gives such clear instructions on how to proceed toward liberation from the tyranny of the mind. In many different ways, the poem makes one essential point. Don't let the mind fall into comparisons at all. Wouldn't that be wonderful? But it's a heads up. It abjures us to a listing, line by line, of the many opposites that we should not let arise in the mind, or become very familiar with them so that we can let them go. 34 pairs of opposites are used as examples of what not to think about. I remember this. Love and hate, like and dislike, heaven and earth, for and against, lack and excess, accepting and rejecting, outer things and inner feelings, activity and passivity, one and the other, assertion and denial, emptiness and reality, this and that, right and wrong, dualities and one, object and subject, coarse and fine, easy and difficult, fast and slow, coming and going, free and in bondage, dislike and accept, wise and foolish, one and many, rest and unrest, illusion and enlightenment, gain and loss, stationary and moving, movement and rest, self and other than self, large and small, being and non-being, one thing and all things, yesterday and tomorrow. If you let go of all these opposites, your mind might become very quiet and very expansive, resting in a state of radical inclusion. And I'm sure in your practice of Buddhism, you've been able to see how inclusive the Dharma is. It doesn't leave anything out or anything to stand against. All spiritual work is aimed at developing our highest Buddha nature or human potential. She uses this word. To live in a complex and often violent world with a mind that can be trusted to be clear and wise and a heart that is undefended and open to all things. The key to unlocking this potential or our original nature lies in being able to cease our habit of sorting and judging. And so this entire poem, you know, the finger pointing to the moon in the Zen tradition is saying, leap beyond all the opposites. And Reverend Master Ji would say, reside in the third position. So it is continually pointing to this, line by line. All right. Or I don't want to miss out. Some of you were here a few weeks ago for Reverend Master Zensho's retreat. He kept referring to the still place within, which the statue up here represents. And that is the third position, that which is beyond all opposites. It's another way of saying it. The way to the ultimate is not hard. Simply give up being picky and choosy. Now, Reverend Hubert changed that from the original publication. And I think most of us can understand and value that distinction. We do pick and we do choose. We pick or choose to follow the precepts. We pick or choose to sit down in our meditation for our meditation practice once a day, once a week, whatever it works for you. Some of us a few times a day, but we choose to do that. It's a lot different than the picky and choosy. When we're picky and choosy, I want or I don't want steps right into the equation. And of course, that leads us to dissatisfaction and often unhappiness, because nothing is going to stay the same, no matter how bad we want it, how good it is, it will pass away. So we can pick it or choose it without the I want or grasping. That's part of the practice. Just choose it. So just by not giving in to hatred and craving, will your heart and mind be as clear and bright as the realm beyond the opposites? Now this is pointing to the third position. Your heart and mind will be as clear and bright as the realm beyond the opposites. And it already is when we let go of the opposites or go beyond them. Let but a hair's breadth of discriminatory thought arise, and you have made heaven and earth strangers to each other. And when we're chanting the scripture of great wisdom, when one with deepest wisdom of the heart that is beyond discriminatory thought, this is what it's talking about. That's being picky and choosy. When the craving to possess emerges before your eyes, simply do not persist in following its perverting path. And again, these words are quite, they resound within, and it is actually putting them to use in our daily life that will actually allow us to receive the benefit of the teaching. That's one of the things I was talking about earlier about the scriptures and poems and all the teachings that come out of the various traditions as being beautiful, inviting songs. Well, those songs, we need to follow them in our daily lives. Take the words and put them to use. Otherwise, they just float through the air and disappear. So all of these words are actually a pointing for each one of us to do something about what appears before us when we fall into the opposites. And it's a hole we as human beings will continually fall into. So there is great wondrous teaching here for us to be able to take hold of and follow without grasping. When you allow gratification and dissatisfaction to compete within you, they will create a sickness in your heart. And I'm sure many of you here, if not all, have experienced this. If you are not aware of the deeper purpose for which we train, you toil in vain, however pure your thoughts. This takes us back to, in the Zen tradition, we talk about the great matter for which we train. It's the awakening to the third position. Buddha is the awakened one. We are awake. And it is within our... It is our inheritance to wake up right alongside of what Buddha is pointing to. We all have that. And part of being aware of the deeper purpose that we train is knowing, accepting, maybe putting it on the back burner, but we each have that which is awake within us. And it's the very thing that brought anyone in the door that's here, whether they're here regularly or just walking in the door today, whatever it happens to be, that's what prompted you to walk in the door. It's a gateway in. Oops. Okay. I touched the mic. Excuse me. The all-embracing is perfect, and like the great vault of space, it lacks for nothing and has nothing in excess. Because we are good at grasping after or pushing away, we are not at one with it. And I can verify that. I'm good at it. Do not chase after external entanglements or stoically abide in some inner void where suffering is denied. You know, this is a very straightforward practice. We look with open eyes and with honesty. And one of the results of our meditation practice is becoming intimately acquainted with ourselves and doing so honestly so that we can see what needs to be done. To let go with what needs to be let go of. Not to cling or grasp on to particular wonderful ideals or judgments or opinions. To let them go. Within the oneness of your everyday mind, simply be indifferent to differences. Just this. This is what's here. And any sense of self will completely cease to exist. Our sense of self is what separates us from everything around us. It's a conditioning that we've taken on in this lifetime and many say in previous lives. It's what makes us here and you there. And I think he says self and other in the poem is another point of opposites. It cuts us off from what is right in front of us. If you try to stop all mental activity in order to bring yourself back to stillness, your stillness will all the more be filled with mental busyness. For you are merely attaching yourself to duality rather than coming to know the oneness of your everyday mind. As soon as you try to think yourself into stillness, there goes that little mind. But it's precious because it gets us where we need to go. Not to kick it out. For you are, if you are not conversant with this oneness of mind, Both your stillness and activity lose all their merit. If you try to grant existence to anything, it will cease to have existence. If you pursue emptiness, shunyata, or purity is what Reverend Master Jiyu called it, you turn your back on true emptiness. If you pursue it, you're grasping. It is simply there. And dwell within it. Hence, the more you talk about it or ponder it, the more you turn yourself away from being in accord with it. Terminate your talk, cease your pondering, and there will be nowhere that you will not converse with it within your own heart. And we do have to talk about it. And we do have to let that go. Return to the root of the matter and you will realize the principle. Pursue illumination and you will miss the point. But if you revert to the luminous for even a moment, it will surpass any previous ideas you had of what emptiness really is. And your previous ideas of emptiness will be altered, for they were all due to your erroneous views. This is dwelling in with our stillness. The awareness that is right within us. That is no thing and everything. Nothing to hold on to and nothing to push away. And yet it is full and immaculate. And it is our heritage as human beings to dwell within that. So any views you may have of it, just rest in the experience of the stillness and let the view be as it is, set aside. There is no need to hunt for truth. Simply stop exhaling personal opinions. He's very direct. Cease your abiding in dualistic views and take care not to chase after them or seek them out. For as soon as right and wrong arise, confusion sets in and your thoughts will go awry. The two exist because of the one, but do not try to hold on to the one. If you do not view things in such terms as crude and refined, you will not be a companion to biases. The great way is broad, being neither easy nor difficult to traverse. But if you are limited by your opinions, wary or filled with doubts, the faster you hurry about, the more you slow yourself down. I'm very familiar with this. And maybe some of you are too. We're working on it. Fortunately, the great way is broad and inclusive, so it's always there. If you try to grab hold of it, you will lose the measure of it as your mind enters convoluted and perverse pathways. If you let it be free to be what it will, then you will experience neither change nor permanency. It's just this. And I think Dogen refers to it as being time, or time being. When you entrust yourself to your original nature, you are in accord with the way, roaming where it leads you, free from cravings, for when you set your heart on things, you act contrary to the truth. And when you let yourself sink into a stupor of indolence, it is just as bad. It is not good to wear yourself out in this way. Quite compassionate of him to say that. What use is there in alternating between shunning experiences and being intimate with them? If you wish to advance quickly upon the one course, you must not despise the experiences of your six senses. For with no loathing for sensory experiences, you become once again at one with the omniscient wisdom of Buddha. So this is something that we experience with all of our senses. Eyes, ears, nose. All of it. Consciousness. And some think that we should not feel anything. And this is a mistake. When we feel, we allow it to be there, and it too will pass away. And the liberation of the heart will appear. Don't try to get rid of your reactivity. Just let it be there without acting on it. We can't get away from the fact that it's there and that it will pass away if we give it the spaciousness of our heart to dwell and pass. It took me a long time to decide to come and talk to everyone. I'd been a prior for 18 years and was doing it two or three times a week and felt like an old dried up prune. And when it came time to offer, or I was offered an invitation to offer a Dharma talk, it finally occurred to me that maybe I was being a little stingy. And I was feeling stingy. I'm talking about my senses here. And what turned it over was having a generous heart. The antidote was generosity. And this is a teaching all of us, some of us don't like to feel the emotions or the responses to things that aren't comfortable. Give them space. Give them space to run through whatever they need to run through. And you just have to sit there in your still place without reacting or acting on them. And of course we will. It's frightened or worried or angry or whatever else is there. But then we just come back to our still place and allow this body and mind, which has its own things that it's working out, and many of them we do not know what it is, give it the space to happen. And then the clear blue sky is right there. The clouds do clear. And it isn't easy. So to go on, using your discriminatory mind to seek your original nature, can there be a greater blunder? It is the deluded self that engenders standards of peace and unrest, and enlightenment is beyond such judgments made from like and dislike. Dualities are all what the false self deliberates on. I think we're wired. You know, we come in wired dualistically. That's the only way I can figure. Or the opposites. This or that. That's how we learn, I think. And it can be very, and it can and probably is very useful in growing up. But there is a time to set those aside, because then if we hold on to them with the grasp of clinging, then that's when we begin to see they're not so useful then. So dualities are all what the false self deliberates on. They are the stuff of dreams and fantasies, or as the spots before one's eyes, which are mistaken for flowers. So why struggle to grab onto these and cling to them? Gain and loss, again right and wrong, let go of such things at once and forget all about them. For when the eye does not close in sleep, all dreams cease of themselves. And I think we all know the sweet wine of being right. This doesn't last very long. Yeah. When the mind does not discriminate, all things in the whole universe are the one which is. The nature of this one which is subtle and profound, unconcerned with karmic conditions in its steadfast. Return to it over and over. My words. If you look upon all things in the whole universe as though alike, they will return to what they naturally are. When you put an end to that which needs things, comparisons cease. When you stop all mental activities, there will be no activities. But even when the activities cease, you will still not have stillness. Since both sides of a duality are in themselves incomplete, how can either one be absolute? Rules and standards do not exist for that which is supreme and ultimate. Hence, devote your heart to being impartial, for then whatever activity you undertake will attain stillness. Completely cleansed of wariness and doubts, your true faith will then harmonize discords and straighten out irregularities, so that nothing lingers on, nothing is clung to by memory, bright and empty of expectations, just functioning naturally. Your mind will not wear out its strength, for it is not a place for judgmentalism. However, discriminatory consciousness and feelings will find this difficult to fathom. And yet this is not just wishful thinking. It's something you can put into practice and prove true for yourself. So I'm going to finish reading the poem now, and then that will be the finish. In the Dharma realm of that which is, there is no self or other. So of necessity, hasten to be in accord with it by simply saying not to. Within this not to, all are alike, and nothing is not included. This is where your inclusiveness comes in. The wise and discernment in the 10 quarters have all awakened to this principle. This principle is beyond compression and extension in time or space. Within it, 10,000 years is as a single thought. Nowhere is it not present, and the universe infinite in the 10 directions is right before your very eyes. The infinitesimally small is the same as the largest in this realm where delusions have ceased. In the immeasurably large is the same as the smallest, for no boundaries or surfaces are to be seen, and existence is not other than that which is beyond existence, and that which is beyond existence is precisely what exists. Cleaning up cobwebs here. If matters are not such as this, then by all means do not hold on to this. The one is everything, and everything is the one. If you can be as herein described, why waste your time worrying over not finishing things? Trust and the heart are not two separate things. The not two is the heart that trusts to the eternal. Words fail to describe it, for it is beyond the past, the future, or the now. Thank you.